Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of pitcherless.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined as always by Nick Pollock. We got an early one today, Nick, before games have started on Thursday. Trying to get this in. Got a lot going on.
Absolutely. And we're really excited because as a trade deadline next week, yes. I'm going to have a stream with Paul Sporra at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, going to about 6:20, which is perfect because I think, Eric, you're doing a stream that day too.
I am. So me and James Schiano are going to be live on the Roto-World YouTube channel, but also on Twitter. So you can watch live on Twitter. That's going to be from 2 to 3 o'clock on the trade deadline on Monday. So from 2 to 3, you can hang out with me and James Schiano. You can take a little break, consume some content, take a nap, whatever you need to do. And then at 4 o'clock, put on your best suit and join Nick and Paul through the rest of the trade deadline. I'll probably invade their party for a little bit.
Please do at any point, Eric. As long as you're wearing your suit, you can come on in onto the stream. And the thing about the stream that I really like is it's not like playback in previous days where we can just bring on anybody, unfortunately. However, we really do want to hear from you guys inside of it. We want to answer all your questions, your takes on stuff. You know, we've had guys like PJ in the past come in and give takes on the Marlins trades and everything. It's just been really, really fun. Yeah. So it should be a great time, and it's really the best way to make sure you're staying on top of all of us. But we're doing this in start for this weekend and next week, and it's really hard because of the trade deadline. So what we're going to try and do is say, in general, do we like this guy or not, and less so of those matchups for those guys. Right. Before we even get into it, I do want to highlight the fact that there are some teams that we do expect trades to happen, and who those guys who would replace those players would be, I think, is a really important thing. So as we go through it, we might highlight those major ones. I'm going to tell you right now,
it's not
the number one. If I had to say one player that I am going to be stashing right now, it's Cade Anderson. Yep. Just because Emerson Hancock and Luis Castillo, I feel one, if not both, are going to be gone. And we don't even know if anyone on that team is going to stay healthy for the next month or whatever it is. Cade Anderson is killing it so much. I'm not the biggest believer in him because his stuff isn't that great. He's had really good command, from my understanding, but I'm curious to see how it really is in the majors. But at the same time, like, he's having such success that you have to do that one. Otherwise, I did a podcast with Eno last week on The Craft, and we didn't really have too many that we were excited about. Maybe Carson Wisenhunt will get more and more opportunities and runway there with the Giants. I didn't know if there's anyone, Eric, that you really want to point out right now before we go into the full sys start.
No, I did. I had a same article on players whose value could change after the trade deadline. And I had a disclaimer at the top that I just said, I actually don't think it's going to be like the most exciting trade deadline. And that can always change. But there's not a lot of spots where I'm like, ooh, this guy is going to get a job and it's going to be super exciting. It's like, hey, we may see Sawyer Gibson Long back in the Tigers rotation.
No. He's not doing well.
It hasn't quite worked out. And so I don't know how exciting that is. Like, the Orioles may free up some rotation spots, but like, I don't really know that there's anybody moving in there. So there's not a lot other than your pick of Cade Anderson. There's nothing that I believe is like a, we got to do this right now. You got to get ahead of it. And, you know, we'll get to that as we go through. And then shameless plug before we begin, because Monday is my news day over at Roto World, and I will be manning our news shift pretty much all day on Monday. And so just a plug for the Roto World news, you know, on the website that we will be updating. I will be updating basically any and everything that happens on Monday, from rumors to possible deals to full deals to everything. So that's a good way to kind of get your news throughout the morning before all of the streams happen, as we mentioned before.
Beautiful. All right. So Eric,
we're going to dive in this weekend. We're starting with the AL East and the Baltimore Orioles. They face the Phillies this weekend. Then they have the Angels and the Rangers next week. Trevor Rogers is somebody to watch here on the trade market because he is on an expiring contract. So that's a situation to keep an eye on. It looks like it would be a two-start week for Dean Kramer, and the matchups are good, Angels and Rangers. Do you have any interest in Dean Kramer?
I mean, Dean Kramer obviously isn't looking great. He just had his cutter and his splitter, the main two pitches that are really driving any sort of success that we've seen from him in the past, not looking good. And it's very possible against Angels and the Rangers that one of these two are good for Dean Kramer. He's, I call him Dean Wolf. That is, he's a werewolf who shows up once a month and he's a beast. So I was hoping to remove that label from Kramer, but really he's looking like that again. In your deeper formats, it's understandable to go after it. He's going to get the runway at least, which is a huge thing. And also have that runway with whiffability in some way is a rarity, but it does come with such a bad floor that it can endorse it in 12 teamers.
And then Brandon Young, he gets the Angels. I'm assuming, you know, we're just going to continue to roll this as long as it is lasting.
You know, this is doing much better, of course, than I expected. The four-seamer has been really effective as a stability pitch for him, especially against lefties. And the splitter actually has gotten a lot of strikes against left-handers as well. It's a little worse against right-handers, which is kind of interesting to me. And I am curious if teams like the Angels, who are going to be more right-handed focused, are actually going to be worse for Brandon Young for this reason. But still, he's really proven that this four-seamer is not the easiest thing to hit. And it's like a Ryne Nelson light in some fashion there. Mm-hmm. So we're going with it for now. I'm still very hesitant about it long-term, but against the Phillies, against the Angels, it's a questionable start for me.
And if Trevor Rogers does go, we do have Chris Bassett on a rehab assignment right now, so he could just fill in. Do you have any interest at all in Cade Povich or in, why am I blanking on the other guy's name who we've
Trey
seen?
Gibson, who might come back?
Or Trey Gibson.
So Trey Gibson has actually a really interesting set of breaking balls. They're really good, and he also has near 7 feet of extension. The problem is that the four-seamer and the sinker are not very good, and he needs a little bit better command of those breaking balls and really pitch backward to make that work. We haven't seen that yet in the majors, but over time, I mean, he was a really highly touted prospect. I was like, the fastballs are too bad. We got to wait on this, and it hasn't come together, but I could see it over time working out for him. So someone at least to note there. And Cade Povich, I've talked about for a long time. I actually really liked him entering this year, this time last year, as someone who could be a swatch and just need more reps, and he hasn't gone there. So we haven't seen any sort of development. Of course, he's been hurt. I'm going to wait and see with that one as well. And Chris Bassett, of course, I wouldn't go for. But Trevor Rogers, even though he didn't do well last night, he threw a lot more fastballs over the plate and didn't really have that pitch separation that we've seen. He's going to be great wherever he goes. So I think that Trevor Rogers is actually going to be on the move, and it's going to be a very interesting trade wherever that goes. I think that is actually a prize of the deadline just because I don't think he's going to come at a very expensive cost. And whoever gets them is going to feel like they fleeced the Orioles. Sorry, yeah. Orioles fans.
Moving to the Red Sox, they face the Dodgers this weekend, and then they have the White Sox and the Athletics next week, all at home. It's going to be a two-start week for Patrick Sandoval, White Sox Athletics in Fenway. Decent start last night for Sandoval. You're still getting about five innings, so you're pushing it here in terms of wins, but he's actually been better than I thought he would be. I kind of thought like we'd keep seeing these like four and a third innings, like iffy, you know, outings, but he's been solid. I don't know that I'm chasing this in a 12 team league, but in a 15 team league, I think that Sandoval has kind of worked his way onto at least the streaming radar.
Yeah. 15 team. I don't know. I mean, it's classic Sandoval of changeup slider trying to get everything done, and I still don't really trust the fastballs whatsoever. The command, I don't really think was very good yesterday either for the Irish Panda, and I wouldn't do this personally. Fenway's not a good place to pitch. The White Sox especially can be very, very dangerous. In a 15-teamer, I understand that you want to go for anything that is an opportunity for a win at this point. It feels very risky. It feels like it's more harm than good. We'll talk about other guys. Like, for example, I would prefer Dean Kramer over Sandoval. Mm-hmm. They have floor, but there is more proven success in at times with Dean Kramer.
Yeah. And the Red Sox are reportedly in the market for rotation depth. I don't know that it's somebody, you know, they traded away Connelly early in part because he's hurt and not going to pitch until, you know, probably September at the earliest. So I don't think it's somebody who's going to push Patrick Sandoval. And then I would just tell people a name to keep an eye on if he remains in Boston is Anthony Anson, who's their top pitching prospect, who's absolutely demolishing AA right now. It might be a similar situation to like a Connelly Early, Peyton Tolley situation from last year where he comes up and pitches, you know, makes like three or four starts at the end of the season if they need that rotation depth. And Johan Oviedo is back throwing again after the early forearm thing. So another name just to keep an eye on, not to add.
Oviedo, man. Oh my gosh. I really hope that one works out. What's interesting is that the Red Sox really pushed for extension Payne Tolley, massive extension. Of course, you had Garrett Crochet actually pushing over 7 feet, and then I was really worried about it last year when it got to like the 6.8 or so. You have Jake Bennett they just got from the Nationals, of course, in the offseason. His asset worked out well at 7 feet. And Oviedo is like a 7.4 extension guy. So they're really leaning into that, and I'm curious to see if that pans out. Hey, it's a right-hander too. Oh, my gosh.
I know, crazy. Insane. What is that? What are those? Ooh. What are those guys? Yankees. They get the Cubs this weekend, and they get St. Louis and Atlanta next week. It's a two-start week for Cam Schlittler, and we just need to talk about that stupid curveball that he threw last night. I mean, like, who throws a curve that's that hard and gets that much movement? It's unreal. He's been
tremendous. He upped it massively.
He did 3 miles an hour last night.
Yeah, and it's my gosh. Because he needed it, you know? The RAS pack for Cam Schlittler wasn't enough. And it was actually really interesting to see. I mean, even when he first came up, it was fastball four-seamer that we felt like it was overperforming a little bit. It wasn't getting whiffs. And then he had breaking balls. We didn't know what it was. He eventually got the cutter. But the curveball was the prime secondary. Then he learned the sinker. Then he leaned more into the cutter, changed the cutter, and the curveball disappeared. Then all of a sudden last night, up to 88 miles per hour. With a 37% swing strike rate and a 47% strike rate, that's bonkers. He kept it down too, and it was pretty much only against lefties. And now 47% strikes with 37% swing strikes, you can probably guess, when did Cam Schlittler throw this, do you think, Eric?
In two strike counts?
Two strikeouts a lot. I mean, a decent amount, but yeah, a lot of two strike counts. Anyway, Cam Schlittler is amazing. I think Will Warren's going to go to the pen if they acquire anybody here, or not Weathers. That's my take. He did go to finish the game against Max Fried, or after Max Fried against the Pirates last week, the doubleheader, and he got to start skipped. Something to note there with Will Warren, while Ryan Weathers just did really well. So yeah. I think that's what the path is there. It makes also a lot of sense for when you're doing long relief. You don't want someone like Weathers, who is kind of more hot cold a bit. You have Warren, who's fine and could grind out some innings more efficiently for you. Mm-hmm. In a case where you need someone to come in early in the game. So I really do think that Will Warren's the one who's going to get bounced. And I honestly don't feel like I need to hold him in my 12 teamers at this moment.
Keep an eye on Clark Schmidt, Luis Gil, Elmer Rodriguez are all guys whose names have come up in various trade rumors. Schmidt and Gil are working their way back from injuries. But you know, a lot of trade rumors around the Yankees dealing some pitching depth in order to bring in other talent. Schmidt, I think, is only going to be back in September. But somebody, you know, some of those guys, Heal and Schmidt, if they're healthy at the end of the season, could be in another team's rotation. So again, not guys to pick up right now, but just names to keep an eye on as we see how the trade deadline.
Yeah, Schmidt just moved to live BP about a week ago.
Yeah,
I had completely forgotten about Clark Schmidt there. So great call.
Tampa Bay, they have the White Sox this weekend. Then they go at Colorado and at Seattle. It's two-start week for Ian Seymour, but Ian Seymour seems to be the guy that would be removed from the rotation if the Rays make a deal right now. I will just say Ian Seymour last night pitched as a bulk follower, only went like 4 1/3, and got a win, and so and looked fairly good. And so, yeah.
I mean, yeah, Ian Seymour. It's so funny. The Rays just don't like Ian Seymour. They really don't. They think that all of his the stuff metrics don't like him internally for them, I believe. And like, they're just not a fan. And what is he doing this year? Yes, a 4.37 ERA and a 1.12 whip. But I mean, he's done much better since he's given more of a chance as his bulk guy and starting. 4.2 innings and four strikeouts last night with 0 earned runs, 3 base runners. It's really unfortunate if that's the case. I wouldn't be shocked that if the Rays did get a starter, Ian Seymour would be the piece going back, just because they don't like him that much.
Yeah, honestly, I think that would be great for whatever team acquires him. I do think that Seymour has a path to being a really good, like, third, fourth starter in a big league rotation. So we'll see.
I mean, the other part of that, though, is that, of course, every team needs depth. Like, if the Rays are making their move here, you really don't be after the trade deadline and realize that you only have like 6 starters, and then you only have just whatever it is in your minor league system that has to come up. Like, that is a terrible situation.
And as I messaged you about, you don't want your 6th starter to be Joe Boyle and his 11 ERA in AAA right now, even though we're all trying to make Joe Boyle a thing.
There is Brody Hopkins. Yes, Brody Hopkins is walking everybody. and he's absolutely filthy. But it's just, can you please not go like 3-4 walks in these games? Hey, look, it's another Joe Boyle, I guess. It is interesting. So I, you know, if I had to bet, I would say that Ian Seymour sticks around just because they need that. But yeah, if he were to get traded, I would definitely be jumping on that wherever he goes.
The Blue Jays, they have the Cardinals this weekend. They have Houston and a pickup game against the Cubs in the middle of the week and the Phillies. So it's a 7-game week. It's a 2-start week for Shane Bieber. You know, it seemed like he was on the right track after the last 2 starts. That last start was particularly bad. It's really hard to trust Shane Bieber in a 2-start week at Houston and then at the Phillies, given what we saw last week. I just couldn't do it. And then we should also keep an eye on Kevin Gausman here. He is set to start in the middle of the week, but Gausman is one of those guys on the trade block, you know, expiring contract on a Blue Jays team that's not contending right now. Gausman, you know, could be interesting depending on where he goes. But yeah, I assume you're not trusting Bieber or Scherzer either. And then, you know, Cease and Gausman, you would pitch if they remain.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty straightforward. With Tre'Davious Savage too, it's a coin flip. Even yesterday, I know it was a successful game for Tre'Davious Savage on Wednesday night, but let's be honest here, he does not know where it's going. And as an analyst, I just hate that. It is so frustrating watching those games. It's so frustrating trying to understand how they're going to continue because they don't know how they're going to continue. And that's a hipster to me. Headache-inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster. You could call it a cherry bomb if you want because that has been generally successful over the last 4 or 5 games or so for Tre'Davious Savage. But it's up to you guys, whatever you want to do there. But right, as you mentioned, Scherzer and Bieber, no. I was more interested in Bieber.
Yeah,
but I believe he threw 36% strikes in those 0.2 innings. I think it was because he was talking to MI. They were texting back and forth, and all of a sudden, you know, that's just what happens. But he should be better in the next one. I'm very curious how he rebounds against the Astros. Could actually be good. You know, again, if we're talking about Sandoval versus Bieber in your 15 teamer, I would go Bieber. I don't think that 0.2 innings is like who he is or something. I think he just had a very bad game.
Yeah, my concern is that he had comments after the game about how the ball just wasn't coming right out of his hand.
Did not know that.
When you hear that with a guy who's had multiple forearm injuries, and we know that forearm things affect grip, it's just like, I don't like hearing that for whatever reason you couldn't grip the ball, it wasn't coming out of your hand right, when we've had issues with the forearm before. I'm not saying, like, in a deeper format,
Eric.
Him, but I don't trust it.
Eric is a phenomenal co-host, everyone. I just want to let you know, knowing that information, I apologize. Yes, that is a terrible sign. That is a terrible sign. It's also why I'm a little bit worried about Wheeler at the moment, saying, like, I just couldn't do it. I'm like, what do you mean you couldn't do it?
Yeah, the body just wasn't there. It's like, all right. We're going to move to the AL Central, and we're going to start moving a little bit faster, but we're doing our best.
Yeah.
The White Sox have Tampa Bay this weekend, and then they're at Boston and versus Cleveland. It's 2-start week for Davis Martin, who regression has hit so hard. That changeup he threw to Spencer Jones on the home run, that was a 90-mile-an-hour changeup.
It was hot taco
over the middle of the plate, right? The 90-mile-an-hour changeup over the middle of the plate. I just don't know how you can hold Davis Martin in a lot of formats right now. I am not into Eric Fetty, Noah Schultz. I can't trust for this season. Maybe next year is different, but just for right now. And I think that Noah Schultz might be the one who loses his rotation spot if the White Sox make a move, and
I don't actually agree with that one. I would say it would be Eric Fetty.
I think they're gonna make. I think they might add multiple starting pitchers.
Oh, interesting. So Sean Berg obviously sticks around. He's looking like an ace at this point. Anthony Kay's looking better. I mean, he's throwing sinkers inside with extra movement to lefties now, which I really like. He needs to figure out a little bit more on the right hand side how to consistently get the cutter and get the changeup working, etc. But it's kind of encouraging right now, and you're going to get the Rays, and you're getting a lot of righties against the Guardians. That's cool. But yeah, Davis Martin, Eric Fetty, Noah Schultz. I think the White Sox have more faith in developing Noah Schultz, and they want to give him that runway to be able to do it.
Well, yeah.
I'm curious to see how that would pan out. I would think at least one is gone, and Fetty would be that. Even though he's throwing this harder cutter now, you should throw more of it. But yeah, no, it shouldn't be Fetty.
And a plug for the article I wrote on Wednesday, which is over on NBC Sports, which is about starting pitchers with below average stuff plus who are succeeding based off of command, and most of them also a deep pitch mix. And they're the guys that most of us have a lot of trouble ranking, like your Nick Martinez, your Sean Burke, your Brandon Fought, your, you know, guys like that who have been producing. You know, Jake Bennett is on there as well. And so Sean Burke, you know, leaned into, added the cutter, leaned into the sinker a lot more, is using three fastball variations. I think what we're seeing from him is very real. He's been added in most places, so he's not out there. But I just, you know, I think what we're seeing is a very real development for Sean Burke.
Yeah, no,
the Guardians have three against Arizona this weekend. Then they have the Mets and the White Sox next week. It's two-start week for Gavin Williams, who would love some offense on his side because I don't know how you allow two runs in 14 innings while striking out 23 and you get zero wins to show for it.
He's 1-2 in his last seven and last four games, 11 strikeouts in each, at least in four straight games for Gavin Williams. And guess what he did? He threw more four seamers and cut the cutter and fewer sinkers finally against right-handers. You know, it's like the pendulum swing, as I talked about yesterday on the craft. It's one way to other, and it's slowing down. And finally, I feel like he's at his center, which is amazing. Tanner Bibee, did you catch this, Eric? What Tanner Bibee is doing? I think Tanner Bibee has lowered his arm angle because he's suddenly getting actual movement on his sinker. Actually, good run, finally. He's also getting more horizontal on his breaking stuff. And keeping the 16 plus inches of vert on his four-seamer. That was the last start. I'm so curious how it goes on Friday against the Arizona Diamondbacks for Tanner Bibee and then against the Mets next week. This could be a rise for Tanner Bibee, finally for me, all year.
Yeah, they talked about him on Rates and Barrels last week, 2 weeks ago. And I thought, you know, Eno and Derek and Trevor did a really great job of saying something that I had also heard preseason from the Guardians of like Tanner Bibee kind of becoming a guy who maybe says, hey, I don't really care how many strikeouts I'm getting. My goal is to give innings and my goal is to pitch deep into games. And so his pitch mix change over the last few games has, you know, there's been more sinkers. He's pitching deep into games. You know, the strikeouts aren't really there, but he's giving the team innings. And that is kind of, you know, what I think they want him to be. And, you know, we look at the contract that he signed a few years ago and everybody was like, oh, well, Bibee was signed to be their ace. And if you look at the yearly breakdown of that contract, those are not ace numbers. That's not an ace contract. I think that Tanner Bibee was signed just to lock in some years as a solid, you know, a piece of that rotation. And I think that now with Gavin Williams emerging, with Parker Messick, like, I think everybody's okay with Bibee being the guy who gives the bullpen a break and can go six, maybe seven innings. And, you know, and so I think the pitch mix stuff that you're talking about is adding to that. And now, again, will that make him a top 30 starter in fantasy again, like he was a few years ago? No, probably not, because I don't believe that we're going to see tons of strikeouts. But does he become a solid ratio arm who's going to give you good quality starts? I think that that is a very, that's very likely. We're very likely seeing the floor raising for Tanner Bibee, and that is also important in fantasy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really curious about that one. And Joey Cantillo, we're still in on. We really love the extra velocity and the curveball usage. We think that's a fun thing. Maybe the cutter even getting there too. And Slay Ciccone, even though he added 1-2 ticks, did not work out. He had like six whiffs despite that in his last one. Parker Messick is now back to 95 again, which Eugenio calls you add one tick for every lefty for their velocity. So that's 96, if you imagine, from the right side. That's pretty dang hot for Parker Messick. So that's the Guardians. We're going to talk about the Tigers, but we're going to do that after this break. Eric, where is Tarik Skubal going to go?
Don't make me say the Dodgers.
I know. But it's going to be the Dodgers, and I hate everything. Honestly, what I hate most about it is it's going to be another fuel for the fire for owners to say lockout. And that's the thing that I hate the most about it.
And the owners are probably all okay with
that. Yeah, exactly. The thing is, if I'm the Detroit Tigers, if I want there to be a season next year, I just say, no, I don't care what you give me, Los Angeles. I am not trading Tarik Skubal to you. Please do that.
The team that apparently really wants him and has the pieces is the Rays. Ooh. And the Rays have the pieces to make this deal.
Would be so fun.
And they should.
Drew Rasmussen and Tarik Skubal and Shane McClanahan and Griffin Jacks.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We'll see if they do it. They have the pieces. They should make the move. But we will see. And another Another name to watch in the Tigers for the trade trade is Casey Mize. If they do decide to trade players away, they could move Casey Mize. Just a name to keep an eye on. Troy Melton is going to stay in the rotation, and he also gets two start week against the Mariners and Giants. He has been just electric. The whole starts where we were like, hey, the strikeouts aren't coming. Well, things are starting to click right now. Yeah. And so hopefully you added Troy Melton early on. Keydair Montero is back in the rotation with the Jack Flaherty injury. I believe he will likely stay in the rotation.
Oh, there's no question he's going to be there.
Is also going to move. Montero gets the Giants next week. Montero also featured in my article on guys who have poor stuff plus numbers but are succeeding with command and deep pitch mixes. He's made some changes to the pitch shapes over the season, which have allowed him to throw more strikes. And I just think that Montero, maybe it's just a 15-team situation. You could stream like against the Giants in a 12-team. I think that that could be feasible. I think Montero might be more of a streamer, but I like him as a ratio play. And I think that he needs a little more love now that he's in the rotation. And then Framber is Framber. Hasn't been a great season, but he gets the Giants next week. And I think that you're going to be totally fine with that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm just looking at also the Tigers, who else they have. Ty Madden would be considered for the rotation as well. I'm not too enthused by that one. There is Jackson Jobe eventually coming back. There is an IL stash to think about, because I would hope that the Tigers would want to give him some sort of opportunity here in the rotation, especially considering that they don't need him in the pen like they did in the past. So I would be looking into that one as well. But otherwise, there really isn't too much to get excited about with the Tigers. And I'm worried about Casey Mize. He had a big drop in velocity last year. We're talking like 90 miles per hour after this previous, like as his minimum, where the previous game's minimum was 93. And he was at 92 for the game. It was really bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm worried that there was something at play there for Casey Mize. So be on the lookout for that one. Framber Valdez isn't going to figure it out. I just don't believe it at this point. It's maybe he does for 2 months and like everyone's like, oh, hey, Framber Valdez is great again. I'm like, I can't do this, guys, every single offseason. Who we got with the Royals? Oh, yeah. Don't start anyone except Michael Wacha against the Twins.
So just talk Randy about
Dobnak. Randy Dobnak. I can't do it. I can't do Randy Dobnak.
I know. He's just getting a lot of attention because the results are there. But
two games, and one of them was five innings and this one was seven in yesterday. I led with him. Randy gobsmacked. Is the one. It took a long time for that one. I didn't want to do some knack pun, you know. Sure. I've already done Dobby in the past. It was like, if Randy is, I gotta do something with Dobnak. Just to be very clear about Randy Dobnak and what you're going to see in that article is pretty much him throwing tons of sweepers to right-handers, going dancing with the disco there, and that worked out for him. And then just a ton of these sinkers just going over the plates, and some changeups and some called strike sweepers to left-handers. And sure, I mean, it's fun for me feeling like I'm watching your uncle step up and be like, all right, kids, step aside. Let me handle this, you know, and just like chuck it, like yuck it, like it's Bart Simpson with cupcakes against the wall, you know, as he goes up there and just turns out. It's so fun to me. But as far as fantasy goes, you're playing with Koufax. Like, do you think that you're going to get fortunate? You might again against the Twins. Sure. You might against the Cubs away from Wrigley, but the floor is too low that I wouldn't want to go for it. And the ceiling, yeah, it's maybe good ratios. You're not going to get the strikeouts there too. So if you're desperate for wins in a 15-teamer, fine. Minnesota and the Cubs hosting in Kansas City, fine. But I really don't suggest going after this in a 12-teamer.
Yeah, and then we're finishing this off with Twins. Joe Ryan, two-start week, that's great. It's Kansas City and then Milwaukee next week. The Twins say they're not selling, and so I don't know that anybody is going to be dealt, but you can't trust Bailey Ober right now, and then Zebby Matthews and Connor Prelip are just streamers, and Prelip gets the Brewers next week, which is not a great matchup. I wouldn't love to attack that, and I just can't really trust Zebby right now. I know he gets the Royals, and so in a 15-team league, you know, it's going to be the Royals without Bobby Witt and without Vinny Pasquantino and like without Mikel Garcia. Like, I get it. It's a really good matchup. And so in a 15-team league, if you wanted to use Zebby next week, I do not blame you. It's hard for me.
Yeah. I will mention that Zebby Matthews was throwing 1 to 2 ticks harder last game. And it wasn't necessarily a better result because of it. But I am going to at least note that, hey, maybe Zebby is actually better than he has been. And I should also note that Joe Ryan might be traded. It's possible. He is healthy because he did sit 93 on a Wednesday night. So we'll see what happens there with Joe Ryan as well. But yeah, Bailey Ober underneath 87 miles per hour. I have to keep raising Taj Bradley up in my rankings. He's a perfect example of a pitcher that I don't quite believe, but I recognize that he's only really had one rough patch this entire year, and it was surrounding his injury. And at the end of the season, we're going to look back, we're going to see the full numbers of it. We're going, oh my gosh, look at that strikeout rate, look at this and that. I really feel like he's fixed it. Like, no, I watch him and he still doesn't really know where it's going. Sometimes a little bit more, maybe a little bit different thought process here and there with the Twins, but still it's, I really don't trust this. And I'm going to be down on him entering next year. I'm just going to tell you that right now. I'd be shocked if I was consensus on him. So Taj Bradley at Seattle, at Milwaukee right now. Fine. Just go and do it. I know you're going to do it. Connor Phillip, let's hope, you know, let's hope.
Yeah. Let's hope this weekend against Seattle is a good one. Moving to the Athletics. They're at Cincinnati, at Boston next week. We might get JT Ginn back. That's two start week. We should note the Athletics are a team that could trade players away. Jeffrey Springs is somebody who could be on the move if another team wants rotation depth. Just keep an eye on that. He has been interesting outside of Sacramento in the past. Jack Perkins and Gage Jump were both pretty good against the Red Sox this week in Sacramento. They will both get the Red Sox in Boston. Are you willing to buy back in on either one of those guys?
Okay, so Gage Jump, yeah, did really well against your Red Sox, and it was four-seamer and slider. Once again, throwing lots of strikes. Effective. Cool. He does get the Tigers. The Tigers, to me, aren't the scariest of offenses. That could work, again, in Sacre Verde. And then against the Red Sox, away from Sacramento is a good thing. Jack Perkins, right-hander, against the Red Sox, good thing, away from Sacre Verde. So I have both of those as questionable starts. I might say a questionable start for Jacob Lopez, but I just hate that it's Cincinnati. Because let's be real here. Jacob Lopez, that's multiple starts now of nailing last year's hot summer approach. Okay. Jay Crumpler focused on it, focused him on the roundup last weekend, highlighting this. And he did it again, which is sliders are down to right-handers. Cutters are playing that game with a four-seamer like we saw last season, which is up and away to right-handers, where the four-seamer does not make it to the plate while the cutter makes it over. It's a really fun thing of X Games that David Cone used to talk about, down and away, but he's doing it up and away instead. And then you have this slider that comes back over and is effective. 76% strikes yesterday for Jacob Lopez. He had 8 Ks against your Red Sox as a lefty in Sacre Verde. Mm-hmm. 5.1 innings, 1 run, 9 base runners. Yes, got a little bit hit around. 8 Ks, 19 whiffs. This is not completely random here. This is a lot of the same stuff we saw last year. So I'm kind of in at Cincinnati. I'm just going to throw that out there because he really has found something again that we haven't seen since last August.
Yeah. Man, the Red Sox can't really hit right now, but they're still winning, so that's okay. Houston, another team that could be adding a pitcher. They certainly could use another pitcher. They have Texas this weekend. They have Toronto and San Diego next week. It's two-start week for Peter Lambert, who has emerged as one of their safest starting pitchers.
Amazing.
I wrote up Hunter Brown in my streaming starting pitcher article this week that he had a pretty significant arm angle drop in his last outing, which was his best outing. And whether that's to compensate for the previous shoulder injury, which it certainly could be, or whether that was just something about feel, it's something to keep an eye on for Friday against the Rangers. It was about a five degree drop in arm angle from where he sat pre-injury. And so that's not a nothing change. That's absolutely something to watch for Friday. And then we'll see if that impacts him going forward. We saw Hayden Wesneski back in the rotation. We saw Ronel Blanco back in the rotation. Do you care about either one of those guys in redraft leagues?
Not really. Wesneski's not really doing enough for me to get interested. And Ronel Blanco kind of is doing what he used to do, which is sliders and changeups, getting most of the strikes while four-seamers are up and out of the zone. And he's just kind of avoiding lefties as much as he can specifically. It's possible that that does turn a good start against either Texas or the Padres. I'm not going to tell you to do either one. But yeah, Peter Lambert, man, hopefully being a Holly soon. And please, Hunter Brown, just get that vert back. I know the arm angle and everything like that, but like, you can't do the same thing like this. You've been really bad with your strike rates. I'm sure I know it was better last time, but you got the 96 finally. But without that vert, it's not the same. And you never really had consistent secondary. So please get that back.
Yes, get it back. And I'm with you on the I'm not interested in these other guys. And obviously not Emi either. I cannot. Can't do that. The Angels, they have Milwaukee this weekend, including on Sunday in our Peacock game. And then they have Baltimore and Miami. It's going to be a two-start week for Reed Detmers, maybe, if he's still on the Angels. Reed Detmers, Jose Soriano are two of the names to keep an eye on at the trade deadline. But you know who will remain is Walbert Urania. Milwaukee this weekend, Miami next week. He's been great. Added some velo in the last start. We'll see if that carries over. Provided Reed Detmers is traded away, I kind of feel like Urania is the only starter on the Angels that I have any interest in for right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think I really agree with that one. I'm not someone that goes into Ryan Johnson. I'm so sorry. I mean, obviously you have Soriano, fine, like a hipster in here. Like he will have those good games. I will mention that Soriano has had some good starts, but the strike rates are not what they used to be. Finally, you did have one of them, but it's just, you don't know what you're going to get from Soriano. And that's just kind of what that is. So I'm very curious to see where Detmers goes. And Urania is throwing harder now because he wasn't throwing harder and hard enough, which is just bonkers. It was a 90 mile per hour changeup. Now it's 92. He's now sitting 99 instead of 97, 98. Like insane. It's really fun to watch that go. And also the sweeper that they're calling it is kind of really a curve at 89. It's this like 8-6 curve. That means negative 8 and down 6. So it's not like it's a big sweeper at like 14 or something like that. It is very much like, I remember even seeing a slow motion where we really see like the proper curve and everything. It's filthy when he throws it right. He just doesn't throw it right often. But man, if there's any moment that Urania like actually gets feel for that, which I don't know if that will ever happen.
Maybe.
Oh my gosh. Like Urania is insanely good if that happens. So I'm so curious. It's a big if.
The path to Urania, the outline of how he succeeds makes clear and utter sense. And so we just need to see it click into place more consistently. And this is his first year in an MLB rotation. So
yeah,
maybe it does. Seattle, another team we talked about at the beginning. Very interesting to see what happens. They get Minnesota this weekend, Detroit and Tampa Bay next week. We know that there's no two-start weeks because they're using six starters currently. Luis Castillo, Emerson Hancock are the most likely trade candidates. Jeff Passan has said Hancock is the most likely because Castillo is owed like $22 million next season. Hancock, obviously controllable for more time. It's the same situation with all these guys we've talked about before. I guess my question to you would be, we're going to see Bryce Miller Friday against Minnesota. That has not happened yet. But are you starting him Minnesota and then next week is Tampa Bay? Are you concerned at all about these recent struggles or are you still throwing Bryce Miller out there?
I mean, you could say the same about like George Kirby, right? Are we doing this? I feel more confident in Bryce Miller at home than I am George Kirby. Because George Kirby is just, look, I've watched all these games and I'm like, hey, this is the approach that works. You know, you should know by now what approach works. And then you do it for one game. I'm like, this is amazing. And then you don't. And the next one allows 700 runs. And there's just a lot of these pitch calls also that is just, why are you throwing this sweeper that at two strikes, 1-2 to Jock Peterson that just misses, that he doesn't go after, misses that called strike down and away. And is a ball, and then you throw it again, but now it's in the zone. So he just saw this. He knows the other one was a ball, and you throw the same thing again, and then he hits it for a home run. And it's like, yeah, if he actually was fooled by it, he would have swung it on the previous one. But I don't get it. I really don't, and I'm just kind of done in mentally. I also recognize it's at home, good enough matchups. Like, it should go fine for them. And Bryce Miller, at the very least, like, he hasn't fallen further on the velocity. The command of the secondaries has gone down, and it does really feel, of course, that bone spur is bothering him. So take that as you will. I still feel like he has enough to be productive in these two. Also, let's say Emerson Hancock is dealt, then it is a two-step for Castillo. I think both of them will. I think, you know, Jeff Passan put out a quote saying that some owners are considering it a lost year in 2027 when it comes to trades. And it might be a case where Luis Castillo, okay, doesn't really matter as much or so. I don't know exactly, but they've been trying to get rid of Castillo for a while. I imagine some teams like, all right, there's some decent depth or something that we need. And then the Mariners are going to have Brian Wu as the two-step there because there is an off day. And it's a six-man, which means he would be ready to go for Tuesday and Sunday. So keep that in mind that he would be Detroit and Tampa Bay if that were to happen.
Yeah. Moving to Texas, they have three against Houston this weekend. They have three at San Francisco next week and then Baltimore. It's a two-start week for Mackenzie Gore next week, Baltimore and San Francisco. Mackenzie Gore, who I just read a tweet, has a higher ERA than Zach Littell this year.
Oh my gosh.
If you're curious how Mackenzie Gore's season is going. There was also a tweet just put out. Even though Fangraphs has Jordan Montgomery starting on Friday, Jordan Montgomery is getting one more rehab start on Sunday. And so Jordan Montgomery will not start this weekend for Texas. And then if he's starting on Sunday, he will certainly not start on Wednesday against the Giants. So Jordan Montgomery, if and when he joins the rotation, it's probably next weekend against Baltimore. And I think that you and I are both on the same page of like, hey, it's great that he's back on the mound. Let's see a few starts before anybody is trying to rush out to add Jordan Montgomery. He's not somebody you need to stash, but he is somebody who, you know, could be interesting. You know, if he looks close to the guy we've seen in the past, he could be an interesting, you know, 15-team option.
I'm so curious how that works out. Yeah. There's also at some point Cody Bradford, by the way.
Yeah, he started throwing back again.
So we'll see how that one goes. I really hope they deal with Mackenzie Gore. I really just want someone else to get another chance messing with him because he has the stuff and everything. It's just he's not figuring it out anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how that one would go. And Kumar Rocker, I'm finally believing more in Kumar Rocker. Why? Because he's throwing a sinker that actually has proper run now. It's not two bad fastballs. It's a sinker that can go inside and jam right-handers. And he tried to use it a little bit more. He had that run in the previous game, but he didn't quite get it inside. Last game, all but one was inside when in the zone to right-handers. And that one was outer half to Randy Rosarena for a home run. So as long as he gets it inside, it's successful. And then the slider is super well commanded. The cutter is still an effective pitch there too for about 65% usage. It's starting to come together for Kumar Rocker. I like this against Houston because at Houston, more righties, great sinker inside, right? Then you have the Orioles after, a little bit tougher, of course, but at least it's in Arlington. So I'm more encouraged about Kumar Rocker than I think I've been all season.
Yeah. And we're going to move to the NL, and we're going to have to do that very quickly because, as always, we're running over. So we're going to go very quick into the NL East. The Braves, Washington this weekend, then Miami and at the Yankees. It's two-start week for Chris Sale, so you're going to use that, obviously. Expect the Braves to make some additions to this rotation.
Yes.
I'm curious what you thought about AJ Smith-Shawver. We should just state he was used as the 27th man in the doubleheader on Wednesday. That was a smart procedural move for the Braves because they could send him right back to AAA and not have to wait 15 days to call him back up. I would expect AJ Smith-Shawver to make a start next week in the Braves rotation. I think he looked good enough. He looked pretty good for four innings, and then he tired because, again, he's making his return. Velocity was up across the board. Velocity was up about 3 miles an hour, 4 miles an hour on his slider, which makes me think, I looked at the movement profile, that it's almost more of a cutter now than a slider. He added in a sinker, and so we're getting three fastball variations from AJ Smith-Shawver with a harder splitter than we saw in the past. I am intrigued by this. Again, you're getting a guy off Tommy John, and so I think you're going to have inconsistencies. So I think this is limited more to like a 15 team, but I enjoyed what I saw for the first four innings.
Eric, he was sitting 97 miles per hour. He threw 44 seamers. He threw 19 splitters at 85. He threw this 90-91 mile per hour slider twice. a curveball at 76, 77, and a sinker that he threw three times to right-handers, really didn't get them inside at all at 95. How many whiffs do you think A.J. Smith-Shawver had around 70 pitches?
Oh, I mean, I was at the game. He did not have a lot. So
no, he had two, Eric. Yeah. Two. Mm-hmm. With the increased velocity. And without seeing anything really in the secondary department that got me interested, yes, that more cutterish slider at 90, 91 is interesting. It's like 6 to 7 inches of vert on that. A little extra lift, but it is like gyro otherwise. And that splitter, you are going to have some games where that one works, but that's it, you know? And that four seamer is clearly not like a whiff magnet. It had one whiff on 40 thrown. So,
yeah. I mean, you have to wonder how much of that is also location. We talked about like rust and command.
He actually located pretty well, and certainly in opportunities to get whiffs on this pitch. So I'm a little discouraged at the moment. I remember with A.J. Smith-Shawver in the past, it's never quite like clicked in that way yet. So I'm not going to be circling him and be like, I cannot wait for this. I was hoping to see more. Actually, Spec added him just to see what we would get. And I'm probably going to move on from it right now.
Yeah, I have him in Tout, which is a 15-team league. And right. It's also unlimited IL. So every hurt pitcher just gets put on the IL, not dropped. And so I'm going to keep Smith-Shawver there. I prefer Smith-Shawver to like Bryce Elder and Grant Holmes in terms of like if I think any of these Braves starters are interesting. And we'll see. Moving on to Miami, who has apparently said they will listen to anybody to trade offers for anybody other than Yuri Perez and Sandy Alcantara. So those two guys are going to be staying in the rotation. We'll see what happens otherwise. Right now, those are probably the only two guys you can start, especially because next week it's Atlanta and the Angels. And I still wouldn't like, it's a Ryan Gusto two-start week, but you're not going to get excited for that. Tyler Phillips, you're not going to get excited for. Jansen Junk, I still think there's a path for, but I can't start him against the Braves. But I think that the foundation of what Jansen Junk does, I think it's workable. I covered him also in the article I wrote on Wednesday. And I think that Jansen Junk actually just throws too many strikes. That I think that Jansen Junk would benefit from trying to get a few more chases, trying to get things off the plate a little bit. But I think there's a foundation there that at least keeps me just checking to see how he's doing. Because I think this one day we could start to see it start to click in a little more consistently.
I sure hope the Marlins trade him. They won't, but I sure hope they do, because I really do feel like it's another case where a guy has all the things you really want and the team hasn't unlocked it appropriately yet. Alcantara obviously looking cool and great. Gusto and Phillips not really doing all the things that we want. Phillips was a little more interesting in the last one and gave like hints like, hey, maybe I'm actually executing X, Y, and Z. But I need to see a little bit more from it. And Yuri Perez, just please don't throw sinkers. Don't throw sinkers. Why are you throwing sinkers? Don't do that anymore. But Eric, we got to talk about the Mets, but we haven't taken a break in a while, have we? We got to do that. So we're going to talk about the Mets after this break.
The Mets, another team that will likely have a drastically different rotation next week. They end this weekend against Miami, and then they're at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh. It's two-start week right now for Christian Scott at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh. What did you think of Christian Scott yesterday? I thought it was a pretty decent outing. I know that he didn't locate really well in the sixth. He started to kind of like, in particular, the Matt Olson RBI single was a four-seamer that was not spotted well in a two-strike count. It got too much of the plate. And so there are some things like that that we'll continue to see with Christian Scott, but I know that we tend to want to avoid Pittsburgh, but at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh, I think it's a decent two-step for a pitcher that I think has some talent, and I'm interested in Christian Scott for that.
Yeah, this is the very first six-inning game that Christian Scott has had all season. It's not due to pitch count either. I mean, he's had multiple games, at least 90 pitches, or at least hovering around it. And yes, 98, so they did really let him continue, and I'm really impressed and really happy that they not only let him stay in after that Matt Olson single, but also after the out after the walk after to get first and second, and then let him finish it against Dubon in a 1-0 game at that point. I love that they let him battle out of it finally and get through it. But it does highlight, right, Christian Scott is still trying to figure out how to utilize his entire arsenal to really ensure that he gets through six innings a ton, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not seeing the whiff rate on his sweeper the way that I want to. Just one whiff on 18 thrown here. The cutter was utilized less, just 11% usage yesterday. So this really was a four-seamer first game, and he did go upstairs with it more so than usual, which is nice. It's a 1.5 height adjusted VAA at 15 inches of vert at a low-ish 30-degree arm angle. Like, that should be successful upstairs. And yeah, we saw about 20% swing strikes on that. So if that continues, hopefully we can see Christian Scott get back to getting that sweeper away to right-handers effectively for whiffs, and hopefully that cutter and curve can really be utilized better. I mean, he's throwing more curves to the lefties, at least. You know, it's that's an improvement, but he doesn't throw to righties. He doesn't really love trying to throw it in the zone, it seems like. He did better yesterday, but I feel it's not something that he can do consistently. We talked about that with Eno yesterday. So I'm kind of out on Scott rest of season. Right. However, in this situation, as you mentioned, 100%, questionable start for me at Cleveland. They're going to throw all the lefties at him. I mean, it's going to be an exclusive lefty lineup. And that will really depend on his curveball being executed down. If he can do that, then okay, then we're cooking. Otherwise, it's going to be backdoor sweepers and inside cutters that he's going to have to go with. Four-seamer is going to be good, but not quite as dominant as you want. So a little worried about that. I'm curious where Freddy Peralta goes. Maybe we'll see Jack Weininger finally.
Maybe.
Jonathan Santucci just got to AAA. He's actually been pitching better than any of these guys. I think the Mets also could make a move for a controllable starter. There's been some discussion on Mets beat writers that a guy like Reed Detmers might interest the Mets because they would pick him up for multiple seasons. So that's a name to keep an eye on.
That doesn't make quite sense because I feel like the biggest trade piece they have is Freddy Peralta.
Well, they have some players in the minor leagues as well.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, the Angels love failed prospects. So do you want Mark Vientos? Take him. We'll see
how it goes. Oh, my gosh.
Zach Thornton should remain in the rotation. I'll have an article coming out on Zach Thornton after I spoke to him. He is somebody who was also in that article on pitchers who are succeeding without really great stuff. I would feel better about it if he was utilizing his changeup more because, you know, as a lefty with plus changeup, I talked to him about that, and so that'll be in the article. He is a three fastball. He's like a Rasmussen type of approach. Cutter heavy, but four-seamer sinker. His three most used pitches are fastball variations. And so in that sense, he is part of the Raz pack, but not maybe to the extent that some of the other guys are. But I love to see the changeup more. Sean Manaea, two pretty good starts in a row, and if you wanted to use him in a 15-team league against the Guardians next week, I don't think that's the worst idea, but he's kind of just on the streaming radar right now. We'll see if he keeps that spot, which he probably will.
I do want to note with really, Zach Thornton, the sinker is not used too much, only through four in his last game. It's really four seamer cutter, and to me, I think of it as like when I think of it, like I think like those are the three pitches, and that's just what they do. Okay, and then maybe you have some other ones. The whole idea is you have the three main ones, and then two that you forget about, right? And Zach Thornton is really four seamer cutter of just doing a really good job again that cutter inside of right handers and with that four seamer. I think lefties are still a little bit of an issue. I mean, he's going away with the cutter effectively, but it's not quite as solid of an approach there. And yeah, he really does need that changeup down away. That's like the last missing piece for me to feel like, oh, you have something really, really cool here. Against the Marlins, fine, but I would be cautious later on. And Clay Holmes is eventually coming back. I would not start him in the Still Hill.
I also don't think he's coming back to the Mets. We'll say that. We'll see where he goes. Mm-hmm. The Phillies. They have Baltimore this weekend, Washington and Toronto next week. It's a 7-game week, so it's a 2-start week for both Aaron Nola and Jesus Luzardo. At this point, we know what the deal is with the Phillies. You start Luzardo, Sanchez, and Wheeler basically regardless. Yes, you're still starting Wheeler this weekend against Baltimore. If it's two straight starts where we have velocity issues and all those other concerns, maybe we'll have a larger conversation, but you're not going to react to the one start from Wheeler. And the Phillies need help in the rest of the rotation. I expect them to add another starter. We'll see who it is. But I don't think that, you know, Brian Keller is long for the rotation.
I mean, unless it's a questionable lefty going against the Nationals, I would start Trevor Rogers against the Nationals, guys. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that, you know, whatever. Well, I could see them trading Andrew Painter to get a current MLB starter. So
this is your Clint Hurdle. Oh my God, Clint Hurdle. Clint Frazier and Andujar.
Miguel Andujar.
Is Andrew Painter now, yeah.
Wrapping up the NL East with the Nationals. They get the Braves this weekend. They get the Phillies and the Reds next week. It's two-start week for Zach Littell and potentially Cade Irvin, who is set to come back. Oh, sorry, Jake Irvin, who is set to come back into the rotation. Right now, I think you're starting Foster Griffin, you're starting Cade Cavalli, and the rest of the Nationals rotation, you kind of don't have much interest in.
They should be dealing Foster Griffin. I believe it's a one-year deal. So
yeah, there is some thought that there's a discussion about that the Nationals, with a new front office, think that Foster Griffin is somebody who they really like having and has been really beneficial, and they would like to try to re-sign him.
Right, right. Have an extension or something like that. But
I think the next few days, we might get a... I think the next few days seem like they'll get a lot of conversation of, do we think we can keep you? And if we don't think we can keep you, we'll trade you. But we would like to sign you to some reasonable extension. And I don't think Foster Griffin is going to like break the bank. You know what I mean? Like, he's had a good season, but this isn't somebody who's going to be signing for $25 million a year. So there is still a chance that the Nationals, you know, who might say, listen, next year our rotation is Cade Cavalli and Connolly Early, and we would love to have a guy
Luis Perales in there,
you know,
too.
And been around for, you know, even though this is his first year back stateside, Foster Griffin has been a pro for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's been in multiple leagues and he's learned a lot. And that is a valuable veteran for younger pitchers to rely on. And a team like the Nationals may decide he is worth keeping around at a decent cost for the next few years.
You would hope that it could be like a situation where you train him like Merrill Kelly, where you train him away for half his season, get something back for it, and then you re-sign him.
Maybe.
But then again, you don't want to give them an opportunity. You don't want to prestige this, where you send away your person to get secrets, to get benefits, and then they just fall in love with that place and they want to stay there. Okay. A wonderful movie, The Prestige. So we'll see what happens there with Foster Griffin. But yeah, Luis Perales is someone at least to note. I don't know if they're going to want to bring him up right away or something like that, but I would at least have my eye on that as a hard throwing guy, the one who came over to the Nationals in the 1-for-1 Jacob Bennett deal.
Yeah. Moving to the NL Central, we have the Cubs, another team likely to add a starting pitcher. They get the Yankees this weekend, Dodgers, that one game against Toronto in the middle of the week, and the Royals. So it's a 7-game week. It's a 2-start week for Matthew Boyd and Javier Assad. I understand that Monday is against the Dodgers for Matthew Boyd, but the next start is against the Royals, and so I would still be using Matthew Boyd in a 2-start week, even though he faces the Dodgers. I think he's pitching well, and I will take the Dodgers start to get the Royals start. The rest of the rotation, like, you know, there's not a lot. It's like, I don't really trust David Peterson. I don't really trust Javier Assad, especially because he gets the Dodgers. Colin Ray, maybe if you wanted to stream Colin Ray against the Royals for the same reasons we talked about Zebby Matthews. And Shota Imanaga, like, in a deeper league, if you want to throw him out against the Dodgers, I get it. He is another guy who I had in that command article where his stuff plus actually grades out below average, but his, you know, strike rate, his location plus grade out well. He can use the splitter kind of like how a lot of other people use the chain. A lot of other lefties use the changeup because he does actually command the splitter really well. He just has a pretty narrow pitch mix. And so I think if Imanaga were to lean into a cutter a little more against righties or deepen that pitch mix a little bit, you could see him become that kind of quintessential, like, command lefty. But right now he's a little bit riskier with the home runs and all that stuff, because he has the shallow pitch mix and the four seamer that can get hit. And so I understand if you want to sit him against the Dodgers.
Yeah, I get that too. Colin Ray, by the way, is just like a beautiful pitcher to go against weak offenses. I mean, it's insane. I just like how he's consistently good there. Javier Assad has been like that in the past. And Matthew Boyd just looked good again. Same kind of thing. You know, Dodgers, him and Imanaga. We'll see. I'm not sold on David Peterson. I mean, it's interesting. He like commands his sinker and his four-seamer amazingly well. All of a sudden, he did have this extra cut on his four-seamer that he learned with the Mets about a month or so, a couple weeks before he got traded to the Cubs. And it might be better for him. But just keep in mind that four of the last five starts have been good for David Peterson. He's had like, I think, 11 strikeouts in that time. And the one bad one was 10 earned runs. So just know what you're playing with if you are interested in David Peterson.
Yes. Moving on to the Reds. They get Pittsburgh this weekend. They get the Athletics and the Nationals. The Reds next week. The Reds really should be sellers. We will see if they do. They are kind of in the mix, but they're not playing particularly well. And somebody posted their schedule in September, and they basically just play the Brewers and Dodgers to end the season. And so them getting into the playoffs is going to be unlikely. Brady Singer could be on the move, so that's something to keep an eye on. But that would just likely bring Rhett Lauder back into the rotation because we're expecting Nick Lodolo to come back, and so there's no real movement here. The one thing to keep an eye on is that there are some rumors from Ken Rosenthal that the Reds are at least listening on Hunter Green. I'm not fully sure why you would do that, but you know, just a name to keep an eye on. We're not going to go into that right now. Lodolo would get the Athletics at home coming back next week. Andrew Abbott gets Washington in Washington. We've talked about lefties against the Nationals. In a 12-team league, I would probably avoid Andrew Abbott against the Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, it seems right, but we never really know with Andrew Abbott.
Yes.
But yeah, Rhett Lauder is not so bad. It's a changeup, slider, sinker. Like, he finds outs some in these games, and he has not really had an opportunity to just pitch like 10 games in a row or so, mm-hmm. right? So I kind of consider him a sleeper in your deeper leagues for 27. But yeah, maybe he does have some nice streams. And Brady Singer, by the way, is really locked in with low sliders and higher sinkers and like the called strike, swing strike combo of old. It looks like old Brady Singer now.
Brady Singer to the White Sox. Let's make
it. There you go. You heard it here first, guys.
Not a real trade, people.
Actually, to the Phillies makes sense as a right-handed guy. Yeah.
I'm saying from a fantasy standpoint, I'd be more interested in him as a streamer if he goes away from a hitter-friendly environment.
Absolutely. I'm okay with him against the Athletics hosting them in Philly.
The Brewers.
Hosting him in Cincy. I take that back. It's not in Philly. He's in Cincy. Sorry.
That's okay. The Brewers get the Angels this weekend, Pittsburgh next week, and Minnesota. It's two-start week for both Brandon Sproat and Logan Henderson. We're doing the dance with Brandon Sproat again. I don't love the Pittsburgh start. The Minnesota start, I would use him for, and so I don't really trust that as a two-start week, but you could in a 15-team league. Logan Henderson, two-start week, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, I'm far more interested in. We may get Kyle Harrison back. We'll keep an eye on all of that. And then Shane Drohan was another pitcher who appeared in that article I had on below average stuff plus, but deep pitch mix and command is allowing him to succeed. And what I found interesting, as I wrote in that article, was when he was a prospect with the Red Sox, all of the write-ups were about how his changeup was above average and it was his best secondary, and he is not really using it with the Brewers. And so I'm just curious. I would love to talk to him, but I'm curious what has happened in that transition from minor leagues to major leagues that has caused him to dial back the changeup usage, because that's another lefty who I would like to see get that changeup in more. And if it was such a good pitch when he was a prospect, what has happened to kind of alleviate some of that usage?
And what is happening, Shane Drahan? I don't know. Yeah, with Brandon Sproat, I mean, it's been really frustrating that like he can't utilize his secondaries well. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't feel confident with the curveball. He doesn't feel like it doesn't look like he's getting all the whiffs with his sweeper to right-handers. He's going so four-seamer heavy. It's been a journey, and I think that in time, something will click, but it's been frustrating, just like with George Kirby, like, hey, we think that he's going in the right direction. All of a sudden, it's a regression, and it's hard. Now, I will mention in Coors, all right, hosting the Red Sox, oh my God, the Rockies, whew, last time out, Shane Drohan had a harder slider up two ticks, a harder curveball up two ticks, a harder cutter up two ticks. And it was a tighter slider and curveball by 2 inches, but that is I will take that all day for Drohan. It is a curveball now at 82 with -7 and -9. You know, that's -7 depth and 9 horizontal as I reversed it from before. But it's coming together, I think, a little bit here. And I like that expansion. Now, he did throw the changeup, and it was three ticks harder at 88 now, but he didn't really have good command of it. Didn't get a single whiff on any of the eight, just about three strikes on it. Two strikes on it. No, three. I got it right. Quick maths. And so it's a work in progress. He should get these opportunities. I really feel like the Brewers are going, they're leaning into Drouin here. And with Gasser, it's good enough against the Angels. You might see something change where he sticks around. It might be a six man. I don't know what the Brewers are going to do. I would not count out Gasser completely from making a start against the Twins.
Yeah, we'll see. The Brewers also are a team that could add to the back of their rotation.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah,
the Lance McCullers addition did not work out the way that some people on Twitter wanted it.
I mean, yeah, Drouin, Gasser, and or Sproke could be dealt here. So I'm curious how this works.
Moving on to the Pirates, they have Cincinnati this weekend. It's Milwaukee and the Mets next week. So it's a seven-game week. That's two-start week for both Bubba Chandler and Jared Jones, Milwaukee and New York. I would start both of them personally against the Mets. Jared Jones is the only one I would trust for a two-start week because I just trust him more than Bubba Chandler right now. You wrote about this. I've tweeted about this. It's really nice that Bubba Chandler's harder, tighter slider seems to be a thing. It's now been multiple weeks of that because that he's throwing that pitch for strikes, and that's important for him. What's not great is the fact that the vertical movement on the four-seamer is trending down, and the four-seamer is starting to look metrically very similar to his sinker, which is not what you want when you have two fastball variations for them to look very close to one another. And so it's a little bit of like a one step forward, two step back thing for Bubba Chandler now, where like against a team like the Mets that I think next week is going to have dealt a lot of their offense and won't have Juan Soto because we know he's on the IL. Like, sure, if you want to roll the dice, you could do that. I don't trust Bubba Chandler right now. And the rest of the – and then Mitch Keller is the number five, and I'm not starting Mitch Keller.
Yeah, Bubba Chandler, you can't go for it. I mean, I do like the fact that it is a tighter cutter. Like, it is a tighter slider that looks more like a cutter now a little bit. At 92, I think that should be a better approach for him. Maybe it was just a day where like he had it before and this is the new norm and he's trying to figure out that new norm. As far as Ashcraft, I know you guys are worried a little bit because I think it's four of the last five have not been really what you want. And it's a struggle against left-handers and the breaking stuff, not really executing against them. I think it just kind of normalizes a bit, but it is a little bit of a warning sign where he has to do more with his fastball and that's not really what you want. Mm-hmm. And Jared Jones, not quite there yet. He's getting there. So, all right. But yeah, don't start Keller. Don't start Chandler.
Yep. Wrapping up the Central with the Cardinals. It's Toronto this weekend. It's the Yankees and the Rockies next week. It's set up to be a two-start week for Dustin May. We don't expect him to be in the rotation next week. And so it's all jumbled for the Cardinals. Right now, if they keep the rotation as is, starting somebody like Michael McGreevy at home against the Rockies makes some sense, but I wouldn't start these guys in New York against the Yankees. And again, we don't know who's going to take Dustin May's spot in the rotation. It would likely be Hunter Dobbins would be my guess to just keep him up and put him in the rotation. And Hunter Dobbins, if he gets that start at home against the Rockies next week, would interest me. We'll just have to see how that plays out.
Yep. I mean, there you go. The main thing for me is, I know people are into Kyle Leahy, but I just don't really buy it, and especially against the Yankees. And I'm curious how he does against the Jays. Dustin May, though. Dustin May's cool.
Yeah,
he's really cool. And I think it could still work against the Yankees.
What's cool is wrapping this up with the NL West. The Diamondbacks, they have Cleveland this weekend. They have San Diego and the Dodgers next week. It's a seven-game week. So it's two-start week for both Brandon Pfaadt and Eduardo Rodriguez. Eduardo Rodriguez, I get if you want to use it, even though the Dodgers are in there because he's just been pitching so well. Brandon Pfaadt, that's a tough two-start week. Padres are hitting better. And I think we have seen, and I wrote about these changes for Brandon Pfaadt, where very clearly the changes, I'm going to lean into pitches that I can command more. I'm going to fill up the zone. I'm going to try to get early weak contact. I'm going to pitch deeper into games. The strikeouts have just totally plummeted. The ratios are looking good. And so in fantasy, you see the ratios and you think, hey, this is usable. And it would be against certain offenses. But when you're getting like nothing in the strikeout department and you're banking solely on ratios and then you're throwing a pitcher against the Dodgers, that's a really tough ask. And so I think that Brandon Pfaadt has emerged as a pitcher I trust more in deeper formats, because I think the ratios will be there a little bit more than they were in his previous stint as a starter. But it's hard against the Padres and Dodgers.
Yeah, so this is something I used to call making a grave mistake after Kendall Graveman, who would never get strikeouts. And it's giving you an opportunity to just get burned. And I'll tell you a little bit more, actually, about Brandon Pfaadt and Soroka and Rodriguez. I gotta wait until after this break. Brandon Pfaadt is not really someone I want to go for, save for that Padres game, because he is looking at the changeup well, and that's actually really cool. But it's just not really the takeoff that we want. As you mentioned with the strikeouts and the great mistake and all, it's just not really the play I would trust moving forward. Soroka is very interesting, and I'm so curious if he is actually coming back next week. I don't forget about him, guys. This is someone who had a really good feel for his curveball and then added a cutter and then the four-seamer and sinker. It might take a moment for it to come back, though, because that was really feel-based, but Soroka has had a lot of elite command in the past. And look, I got to push up Eduardo Rodriguez into questionable start against the Dodgers. Like, he is still locating beautifully. He had one small blip, and it's still great now. So you just got to roll with Eduardo Rodriguez. He might be the Spider-Man of the year, the best Toby. So, I don't want to do Mitch Brat. I don't want to do Kelly against the Dodgers, even though the changeup was really cool last game. I'm not doing Pfaadt either there.
Yeah. You know what you're not doing is starting any Rockies. So we're going to move on from there.
Gabriel Hughes is kind of cool. All right. Gabriel Hughes, but not in Coors. But yes, it might work. It's a four-seamer that's cut action. Okay, Dodgers.
Okay, Dodgers. They get the Red Sox this weekend. They're the Cubs and Arizona next week. We are getting close to a Blake Snell return. The Dodgers were thinking, apparently, according to Katie Wu of The Athletic, of bringing him back this week to use him just for basically a few starts because they didn't. A few innings because they didn't have a lot of off days. That is not going to happen. So I think he has one more rehab start, but we're getting close to Blake Snell coming back. And then Tyler Glasnow should start a rehab assignment next week. So again, Glasnow in September, kind of in time for the postseason, just like we expected. And then the Dodgers, listen, they're the favorites to land Tarek Skubal. We'll see what happens. That will probably remove Eric Lauer from the rotation. Lauer has been a really good source of just like streaming wins in deeper leagues for us right now. So his spot is in flux. And Roky Sasaki, he just looks better. The fastball is harder. The fastball has more movement. That was an important switch for him. I'm almost to the point where I would use him against the Cubs. Like, I think it's hard to sit him right now.
So Roky Sasaki is, yeah, you're totally right. I mean, he's throwing a harder four-seamer. What worked last time was the splitter actually being far better and trusted for strikes with that four-seamer, right? Just with the heater, it's not quite good enough for Roky Sasaki, but he is essentially, you know, getting more comfortable with that slider, getting more comfortable with the splitter. And yeah, when you're throwing triple digits, that's pretty cool. I got to tell you this, in the last 9 games for Eric Lauer, and that includes as a follower, he has a 5-0 record with a 2.96 ERA, a 0.99 whip, and a 15% K rate. Sub-7 hit per 9. It is ridiculous. And, I mean, he hasn't faced, like, tough teams in here. I guess going into Sacre Verde once, where he allowed 10 base runners in 6 innings in just 2 Ks with 300 runs, fine. That makes sense. But here we go. At Wrigley, not necessarily ideal, but, like, that could work. And then at Chase, like, you kind of have to do it, and it's nutso. Now, it's a two-step, which isn't going to happen because it's a Dodger, so I apologize. It's just going to be at the Cubs. He would be the one that might get replaced, but then again, they need a sixth right now. So, I mean, I think they should just, if I'm the Dodgers, like, why would you pay to remove that right now, you know? Yeah. It's pretty insane.
What's insane is the rotation that the Padres continue to put forward, which has Griffin Canning, Germán Márquez, J.P. Sears, Walker Buehler, and then Michael King. Michael King, who is on the trade block and is somebody who we could see moved. As of right now, he is set to start this weekend against the Giants and then next week against Houston. And you can use him in those matchups. And you'll probably still use Michael King regardless of where he goes, but we will see where he winds up. And I cannot use any of the other pitchers that I mentioned.
You know, the Padres are 1.5 games out of the wild card right
and
now.
And both Joe Musgrove and Nick Pivetta are starting rehab assignments, so they will probably be back in September.
Right.
And so that's part of the calculus is, you know, Nick Pivetta might, honestly, if Nick Pivetta was dropped in your league, like now might be the time to stash him.
That's a great call. And so, yeah, so you got to replace Griffin Canning. You got to replace Germán Márquez. You got to replace, I mean, Buehler has been better, but you got to replace him. You got to replace Sears. Like, it's just Michael King. And this is a perfect opportunity, I think, for the Padres to get a lot of those SP 4 and 5s in the trade deadline and figure this out to just keep themselves competitive and in that hunt while they go and hope that Musgrove and Pivetta can really bring them home in September. So this is going to be very interesting to see what the Padres do with the deadline. I think I do something.
And then our final team for the day is the Giants. They have the Padres this weekend. They have Texas next week and Detroit next week. We expect Robbie Ray to be traded. He is set to start today against the Padres. And then I would not expect him to start again next Tuesday against Texas. Carson Wisenhunt already in the rotation. Seems like he will remain in the rotation. You talked about him at length with Eno Saris on the craft. I was in line with you guys that it's not somebody I'm like rushing out to add. I could see him emerging as like a deep league streamer, but it's not somebody
more than that. 15 over 33 whiffs on his changeup last time. He's doing the Jake Bennett. He did it. The super high four seamer, super low changeup. It was like a 28% zone rate. I'm very curious to see what happens against the Padres tonight or tomorrow night. And then that might be an
aspect streamer for me. Landon Roop continues to just confound me, and I can't figure out when he's going to well and when he's not going to.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, this was a weird one.
It was
the last game. He just didn't have his command. It was three walks and one strikeout. The other really bad one was the one after him putting the quote on the hat, and I can imagine being distressed and everything with that one. So otherwise, I mean, Landon Roop's command has just been absurdly consistent.
Yeah,
I'm doing what Aaron Nola wants to be doing.
I'm still in. It's just frustrating.
And, right. I mean, I guess it's just like, all right, you had an off day. But like otherwise, I'm like, yeah, Landon Roop's pitching as he wants to for the most part, and that was just a weird game.
Yeah.
Well, last thing, Tyler Mahle, don't ignore him, guys.
No,
he's throwing 94 now, not 93. It's 94. So I've upgraded him to questionable for both the Padres and Detroit. And if you're wondering, hey, look, who comes in after if Robbie Ray goes? Yeah, Adrian Hauser is there, but don't ignore Blake Tidwell.
Yeah,
someone in the past who we've been kind of interested on has hard enough fastballs they can go upstairs. It's really more about the secondary command, but has a good changeup, has a breaker in there too. That might be the guy that comes up. I don't know who. Maybe Carson Seymour's involved with it too. There are some interesting guys with the Giants. No one that I would really say is like, oh my gosh, amazing, I can't wait. But that might be the runway that they need to be able to turn into something by the end of August. I'm very curious about that one. So remember Blake Tidwell in that ridiculous Gilbert trade from last year with the Mets. Insane to me. Trevor Rogers. I'm so sorry.
Gilbert was part of the deal.
Yes.
It was Gilbert and Tidwell.
What was his full name, Gilbert?
Drew Gilbert.
Thank you, Drew Gilbert. I was like, I always want to call him Connor Griffin. Anyway, that is going to do it for this episode, Eric. We did it. I know we went a little bit like 10 minutes over, but I think it's worth it. I enjoyed doing
these. We got the info.
We'll do them at 9 a.m. each week. I don't know.
Remember that will be where we will be on Monday, 2 to 3 for me over on Twitter and on the RotoWorld YouTube channel, 4 to 6:15, 6:20.
Yes, something like that.
And Paul.
On twitch.tv/pitcherlist and the Pitcherlist homepage. Now, keep in mind also, that means the list is coming out on Tuesday. And if you haven't heard any other podcasts, guys, the pitcher dashboard that I have put together is going to be in your hands in the near future. And if you want to sign up for PL Pro yearly, you're going to get this and many other things as the same cost. You get 15% off the promo code dashboard for PL Pro yearly. Dashboard, all caps. Go get it today. Support what we do and continue development.
Eric, we're going to go get the rest of the work that we have to do. I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
Happy trade deadline weekend to all of you.